Okay, I'm really excited for you guys to listen to this week's episode. I sat down with Pastor Vincent Robinson and Minister Timothy Butler at the Harper's Chapel Baptist Church in the west side of San Antonio. These guys were so welcoming, so hospitable. As soon as I got there, they had a parking spot ready for the bus. They introduced me to their community outreach that they're doing. They invite the homeless and they invite the underserved and under-resourced to come have a meal or to have a warm place to stay and grab some clothes, have some medical assistance. They do this every Wednesday, and it was just really impressive to see how they're reaching out to their community, and I was so grateful to be part of it. So enjoy this week's episode. All right, so today I'm in San Antonio, Texas, sitting down with
Vincent Robinson, Pastor Vincent Robinson,
okay. Minister Timothy Butler.
Okay, and where are we at?
We're at Harper's Chapel Baptist Church in San Antonio, Texas, on the greater west side of San Antonio.
Okay, and tell me your story. Tell me about yourself.
Timothy is also my blood cousin as well. It's my mom's first cousin, so we're second cousins. His mom is my great aunt. So we've come from a very large family on the Todd side. But growing up over here on the west side of San Antonio, where my dad's family is from, my grandfather was an aircraft mechanic, as well as being a pastor of this church for 21 years. And so there's a lot of things that went on in what we call the Lincoln Heights community, which is what this is, Lincoln Heights. The history is African-American history, a lot of African-American history right here in this community. There's over 30-plus African-American churches in this vicinity of the west side. A lot of them are not operable right now. Some of them are shut down, but there's still a lot of them that are still active. So this was a African-American community. It was rich with African-American businesses, and a lot happened when the Kelly Air Force Base shut down. A lot of the African-Americans and Hispanic community were employed by Kelly Air Force Base on the civilian side. So when that closed down, it hurt a lot of people in the poor neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And so we lost a lot of people lost their homes. A lot of poverty was already here, but kind of took over a lot of the situation, homelessness.
Do you know what year that was?
I want to say it was in the mid-80s, right? It was the mid-80s, yeah. And I remember my dad, before my parents got divorced, my dad left to Pittsburgh because of Kelly shutting down. So he went, and his cousin went to Oklahoma. I think Uncle Butler was already retired.
Yep, yep.
He was already retired from the military. But, that affected a lot. A lot of the community from all parts of the west side. With the military base closing down the civilian side. And so growing up here, I was baptized here. My daughter's baptized here. My aunties, I mean, my whole side of the family was baptized in this church. And so getting married and having kids and going through life, I came back, got in trouble for a while as a teenager. And when I came home in 98, met my wife Maria. She's a believer. I was far away from being believing anybody. We've been married almost 23 years now. So we have three beautiful daughters, but my wife was the main reason why I got back into church. I've always knew church. I knew about church, but I just wasn't down with church. There was a lot of reasons why I didn't. I was, what we call church hurt. Just a lot of things I felt like, didn't help me at all, so I rebelled and turned my life over to the streets. I was a curious child anyway, so I wanted to do things. I wanted to be above the law and against the law. You know, I wanted to do things differently. And my wife was the reason why we came back here when my grandfather was on the end of his pastoring. We came back here and we used to come visit, and we started coming here in 2012 when my youngest daughter, that's gonna be 10, was born. And so she's a good reason why I got into the ministry, why I was what made me want to start coming back to church and get involved in the community. So it was a blessing. Now I look at it now, 23 years later, you know, this is something that needed to happen. And what about you, Tiff?
Oh, man.
You like, don't need me to interview.
And that thanks be to God that he's allowed us, you know, a second opportunity in life, because, boy, we was heading in some serious directions. But the one direction was we couldn't pull out of that because that was just death. We were heading to death and we didn't know. But when I left San Antonio, you know, being born and raised, I left in 87 or 88 to the military, you know. And prior to that, 1981, that was probably like the most horrific year I ever had. I just started playing football, seventh grade. And I remember, boy, I'm about ready to cry. I remember.
Until grandma passed?
Yes. Yeah. And that, when my grandma passed, I was like, bam. That was it for me and God. I was like, I'm done. And he took, oh, man.
So my great grandma, which is a grandma, that's who raised him.
Yeah.
So he was like, he was very close to her.
Like, really, really close. So just even walking away from church was one thing, but my wife one day in October 2015, I'm minding my business too. It's Sunday, about ready to watch the Cowboys. I'm like, man, it's almost 12 o'clock. Cowboys about ready to play. She's like, what's the name of that church Vince said that he go to? I was like, who's Vince? Because I never knew him as a cousin. I never met him.
That's how big our family is. I was more closer to his younger brother, James. Yes. So our family too is 20, what is it, 14?
Yeah.
14 siblings.
14 siblings, and it was so spread out that I never met him.
All of them average anywhere from 10 on plus kids.
Okay. Yes.
He has like 15.
Yes.
You have 15?
Yes. Well, not siblings. Not me. Siblings.
Okay. So we come from we come from a very huge family.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was normal for us to not know each other.
Who's who.
Okay.
Who's who. But the invite was, oh, I'm over at Harper's Chapel. And, all right, we'll go over there. We'll check church out. So it's October 2015. I'll never forget it. Sat right there. He was up as a deacon, right? Clapping. I was like, okay, whatever. You know, Vince is who Vince is. I still don't know who he is. But the weirdest thing, the following Sunday, he went to another church. So it was one of those, the walk just became like, okay, where did he go? He invited us to the church, but he left. But then there was another church God had him at because he was working him that way and working me on this side.
And he stayed here.
Yeah, and I ended up staying here because, I mean, I could have went back to Rise and start a church I grew up in. That would have been too easy. But here it was small. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a lot of people. And I'm like, you know what? If I want to get intimate, then I need it small because I'm so used to small churches. Mm-hmm. So it became, we got here. All right, cool. I knew the songs and I knew scripture, but I just wasn't walking with the scripture. I wasn't walking with God. So the biggest push from walking from there up to the front and then rededicate my life back to Christ. That was like, okay, I got to lay down the little power I think I got. And then it just took off from there. It took off from there. Okay, we'll see. So everything became a test. And being in the military, you want everything hands-on. Like, okay, I got it. I see it. And I used to tell him, I'm not doing no outreach. I'm not going out in the street. I never did it. That's you. Talk to me in daylight, and we're good. And one day we ended up with, he'll probably get more into that story, and working with one of the singers. And she had her own little ministry, but we ended up helping, you know, kids like 16-year-olds, 14-year-olds. And so that impact, I'm like, oh, this is what, you know, walking with Christ is about. It's not being inside the actual walls. You have to physically get out. So why not better partner you up with somebody that's already been out in the streets? Because they'll tell you in a heartbeat, I'm in the street. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got limits. I have limits.
It was just, you know, it was nothing taken away from my grandfather and the pastors before me, but I just thought in this day and age, at this time, what is church, right? You know, and we say we're the body, right? When people say they believe in Christ, we're supposed to be the reflection of Christ, right? We're supposed to be the light. So my thing was, well, I need to be out there in a neighborhood. This is supposed to be a community church. This is supposed to be a church for the community, not for me, you know, for the community where they could come and get anything they need if I'm available to provide for them. So my thing was opening back up the church even during the pandemic and becoming a resource, able to have San Antonio, this zip code, 78207 is the poorest zip code in San Antonio. And provinciously stricken, it's medium income is like $15,000 a year.
Really?
So it's, people are making nothing here. And so I was like, okay, need to have resources for this community, the homeless community and the residential community, and bring both of them together. But that was my ultimate goal, and I knew I was gonna ruffle, you know, some feathers and stuff, but I really didn't care, because, you know, sometimes somebody don't know nothing about God. It's your action and how you treat people and how you talk to people. That's the most they're gonna know about who God is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take nothing for the wrong words come out your mouth, then condemn that person to hell because you don't even know that person, but because you're so caught up in your religiousness that you really forget about humility. You forget about loving people. You forget about compassion. And that is important to me. And I know a lot of people that won't step inside these walls because of their experience with somebody that says that they're a Christian. And so it bothered me for years. You know, I feel like, and I spoke about this Sunday, I said, the church is so worried about being so pro, so anti-homophobic, they forgot about the adulterers and everybody else is in it. You know, let's keep it real, right? Like you worried about being about bashing lesbian gays so much that you forgot about all the other commandments and all the other sins that are in the Bible. Mm-hmm. It's hypocritical, right? So I had an issue with that, and it wasn't me changing the Bible, right? It was just me walking as who I thought, who I believe who Christ was. And that's who Christ was, a person of humility, a person that was encouraging, somebody that was with the prostitutes, somebody that was with the less of these, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, that's not hard. Showing compassion, showing love, praying with people, just being genuine. It's not hard being genuine, you know, but it's just, so that was for me. I was like, I got to do something different with the church. Because it used to just, I had one experience I'll never forget. I was sitting in the, what we call the pulpit. I was sitting in the pulpit, and a prostitute walked in. And immediately, people started covering her up and watching her and this and that. And I'm getting so irritated because I'm like, what? I mean, if she's in here, that's a big step, right? Yeah.
This is during the service?
During the service. And I'm like,
during the service.
Okay, gotta leave that one alone. But the thing is, I've never seen that lady after that. Mm-mm. And she'll probably step foot in another church in her life. And that bothered me because I'm like, that was on our watch. You know what I mean? Like, she came in because she was in need of something. And we blocked her of that need because of the judgmental condemnation that's in your mind and in your heart. It comes from your heart. And I'm just like, you know, get the speck out of your eye before you get it, before you talk about somebody else's, you know? So I'm real vocal when it comes to that, because I just feel that what we do now at the Hub on Wednesdays, when we have all these resources and everything. I had a man named, we call him T, homeless man, that...
You call him T, homeless man?
No, he's homeless. I'm sorry. That's
a nice name.
Yeah. We call him T. He's homeless.
He is homeless. Okay.
Months back, I had an event, and T probably called me everything under the sun, from the MFs to the N-word, you name it. I was it, right? And everybody's like, uh-oh. I just, no reaction. Love you, brother. He walked off. Fast forward 6 months later today, this man loves me. He calls me his pastor because in that moment, I didn't judge him. In that moment, I didn't get combative with him because I had to think about his situation. Yeah. I'm waking up from my pretty house. I'm waking up from my nice pillow. I'm waking up, oh, I got a backache because my therapeutic band was too soft.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? I got up, ate breakfast, made my hot tea with my honey. Right, I got issues, right? Pay bills, but life's still good. Mm-hmm. Then I come down here to my community. He was out here all night on the concrete. Probably had to stay up all night and make sure nobody's robbing him. Yeah. You know, but he's in the trenches. He's in the pits of hell. You know, he's living out here in the streets. So I had to really think about that. I had to really think about my reaction is either going to make it or break this man. And my reaction changed his life, and he comes here faithfully now. And it was all because of that love and that humility and that compassion I showed to him, even in the midst of him being aggressive towards me. But I had to understand his situation. Yeah. And that only comes by relationship. That only comes by sitting down with people and asking them, well, why are you on drugs? What happened? You know, were you fostered, or did you get kicked out of your home, or were you abused? I mean, a lot of these women were raped as children. You know, they went to foster care, fostered out at 18. You foster out. And you're on your own.
That's it.
So those are the things that were so dear to my heart. And I have two cousins that went through the system, and they're out now, foster care system. But, I mean, it's sad to say it. It's a messed up system. It's a broke system. The housing is broke. I mean, it's like anywhere from 8 years to get a house on housing. And the system, you got broke people with a broke system. The government's broke. Everybody's broke. You know, and it's just a broke system. Yeah. And so, for me, that was just on my heart. Is I was telling Tim, and I told my wife, I said, I want to leave a legacy. And I said, and not to where, you know, you're elevating me like, oh my gosh. He was like, God, no, I just want to leave a legacy for my children, so they really know the type of father, type of husband, the type of man I was. And I have three daughters that are watching me. And I want them to know when I'm gone, and I'm hoping I'll be here for my grandchildren. But, you know, I say it all the time. When I'm in that coffin and somebody's speaking about me, I wanted it to be the truth. Yeah. I don't need my daughters sitting up saying,
you know, that's not right.
That was not him behind closed doors.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I want to make sure what I do in public is what I do behind closed doors too. And my daughters are watching me. I'm their inspiration. And 14 years ago, before my heart transformed, I was abusive verbally. I was abusive. We had a rough marriage. My oldest daughter is 18. Had to be older sister at such a young age. It was a lot of trauma. We had a lot of trauma in our marriage and in our life. And for 14 years, been together 23, married 22, but 14 years I caused hell. And I tell men all the time, I say, I didn't become a man until 10 years ago when I really changed my life. I was a punk.
Yeah.
I was nowhere near being a man, you know, and they were looking at me like, I was like, no, I wasn't a man.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, what I define as a man is, you know, treating women with all the respect that's needed, but taking care of your home, just loving and nurturing, and I had none of that. And a lot had to do with my parents being divorced at a young age, you know, me at a young age. I did things differently for myself. My brother that's his age, they went to the Army. They graduated, went to the military. My older sister went to the Army. Shoot, I was like, drop out of school. I ain't trying to hear it. I'm on the streets. My younger sister ran away from home, got pregnant. So me and my younger sister treated our family, you know, the home life differently from the way my other two. My brother was like, done. Peace. I'm out of here. You know, I'll see y'all later. But that trauma, I tell people, it's like a generational curse because it was never broken. So when I started my family, I found myself, my dad was a good man. He passed away, but my childhood was horrific. And there's a lot of things I remember good, but a lot of the bad outweigh the good. And you try to take the good from the bad. But my dad, he passed away in 2016. Probably the best time I had with my dad was the last four years of his life, because I've changed, he's gotten older, we've been able to really sit down and talk about things as a man, and I had a lot of resentment, but I'm glad that we made peace. But in the process, he had a dang good job, but him being an alcoholic and a gambler, it just pretty much manifested to me and my brother, and my brother till the day is 53?
Yeah, 52.
My brother's 52, 53. Not married, not, you know, he's not stable. It's just so many things that that we thought was normal. I mean, who is a child moves like 15 different houses? I mean, we moved all over this area. You know, every time you look up, we're in a different house. And it's just because our house was never stable. Yeah. And I didn't know no different when I met my wife. She come from one family. She come from a home where that's where she was raised and born at. So this was weird to her. Every time that things didn't go right or something happened, I was quick to flight, you know, instead of fight. Mm-hmm. And so it took a lot of growth. But in the process, my 18 and 16-year-old, about to be 17 this Friday, went through a lot of trauma. My 9-year-old, daddy was already changed. So my 9-year-old, all she knows is Pastor Daddy, awesome good daddy, day. Good daddy. The old two, they're like, shoot. Yeah, I wish you was around 10 years ago. Yeah, 1 year earlier. So, but it was important for me for my two daughters. And when I got installed as pastor, I think that was the best time of my life because they wrote a little bio to me and they got up and spoke.
Yeah.
About how they see my transformation. And just a year ago, my oldest daughter finally told me she loved me again. And that meant the world to me. And it took maturity, but it took growth, and it took for me to be consistent.
Yeah, yeah.
Maria, my wife, was traumatized. It took 10 years, and she's still healing. But we're healing together now. Yeah. And that is the most important thing to me is to know what she's valued to me now. And I told her, I was like, why did you stick around? She's like, man, fool, I tried to leave you several times. No, gotcha. Why I can't coming back?
Closing it.
But now she's like, that pain was worth it. And so now we do a lot of couple counseling together with other couples, and we cry together. But it's a beautiful thing. I could really say this is I fell back in love with her because I fell out of love with her for a long time. And these last 10 years has been probably the best time of our life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there you go. Mine is humanity. Humanity.
But I know you had a stumble in your marriage too as well.
Boy, big stumble. I don't even know if it was a stumble. I think I dug my own trench. I forgot where I dug it at. I ended up walking right back into it. That's a big circle of life right there. But that humanity of being in the military and going to different, you know, places. Macedonia was probably the biggest one. Because it's a third world country. Vegetables, they do everything old school. There is no grocery stores. And I'm like, what the what? But we have good engineers. So the engineers come out and build a building in less than 90 days. So when I come back, get called into the ministry, guys, like, that's the hardest thing every individual has is to clean up their own backyard. That hit hard. So like what he was saying, home had to be the first one. Mm-hmm. And that was like, okay, how do you, that was one question that I asked God.
Because he traveled a lot, so he never had to face his, what we say, demons.
Never had to. Every 3 years, I was gone.
He ran away from.
I live in a bus. If I don't like a place, I just leave.
Every 3 years, we gone. I'm like, I don't have to face trouble no more. I just go make trouble somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But when God called me into ministry and it became that humanity, I'm like, okay. And I started reading in Genesis and you get into the next one, I'm like, oh Lord, it's getting too deep. You know, just show me. Show me what humanity is. And you end up at the church and here we are after the installment. It's like we have not stopped. I mean, he asked for it, but it has not stopped. And the one thing that he said, and he probably forgot, and I tell him this, I'm going to keep reminding him until he died. He said, you know, church, there's going to be some people walking here. They're going to look different, smell different, act different. They're not going to be like us. And I'm thinking, oh. And God immediately put me on the ark. And I said, oh, my gosh.
So Daniel knows what I'm talking about.
Boy. And then it just, all the animals came in. We're all creatures of life. You know, we all got different types of walk. But we got to have obedience in that walk. And in that walk, he always preaches about love. You got to have that love. If your foundation is not built on it, then you're going to love somebody else the way that you know how to love. Mm-hmm. And I'm only going to give you 99%. God will give you his 100%. So you start coming in and you're like, okay, what's this humanity about? You got to engage. You have to engage with the people. And Larry, one of the members here, came to him and said, you know what? Close down that one gate. just leave the one open. That way everybody comes in and they get to see all the, you know, what's going on the inside. God tapped me on the shoulder. That's one of the awesome ideas. Now you tell them about VA benefits. So I have to add that piece in also. And it's just been nonstop.
So he works with the homeless veterans. Yes,
that and the homeless veterans. Just get them like, are you getting benefits? Yeah, I'm getting 10%. All right, let's go for some more. You got to sit them down. First thing, you got to start with prayer. Like, if you believe prayer works, then God already knows your situation. Mm-hmm. Now let's do the paperwork. And so that's one of the biggest impacts. If I don't stay consistent in that, then I've gotten off my track. That means I've gotten out of my lane. Mm-hmm. Because I know that lane God has me. And yeah, as an associate, when he walks out, yeah, I got to be that dude. But when he's here, I can still bounce around. I can still bounce around, talk to people. But then that responsibility is gone away. I'll be back. Oh, man. And now you have to put on a whole new hat. But then the blessing comes because you don't have to be, it's me in charge. No, God anointed you that way. Yeah. So people will know they'll have to come to you. All right, cool. All right. The pastor said it was okay. So you have to stay consistent with the people as well. I know my authority. When he comes back in, hey, this is what happened. And we just...
Yeah, I just wanted to break the stigma of tradition, yeah. Religious mm-hmm. tradition.
Because that's what it was. And it was a big tradition.
What me and my wife did before I became pastor, we prayed, and it was this. I just prayed for new grounds.
Yeah.
Till the ground. Let's turn this dirt over and pray for new ground, right? And my thing is African-American history. I already got that, right? Church was built by African-American. My family, it's historical. I love that. But that is not what it's about. That's just, now you're putting stigma, you're putting a name to something. And what it does is when the white person, the woman or the man or the yeah. Hispanic person come to these doors and you have that stigma in your church, and they turn around.
Walk right back
and they're not able to get something that might have been for them. So, and when he was saying about, I was saying people are going to be different, because I already knew it in my heart. I was like, my wife is Hispanic.
Yeah.
She's going to bring it. I was like, I was like, all of our family is either white. I mean, Tia, Shane. Yeah, we got everything. So I knew there was going to be a shift.
Yeah.
And I just enjoy it now. When I look out at everybody on Sundays, you got dudes with tattoos on their forehead, look like they'll murder you in a second. Then you got just the white collar ones. You got the blue collar ones. We're all just family. And I don't know if you had a chance to see everybody work together out here, but it's a beautiful thing. It really is. And people want to get on board because it's not about, oh, you're Catholic. You're Baptist. No. It's about serving.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And people get the irritated. I was like, you weren't saved by God for somebody to come serve you. You were saved because you were supposed to be a servant.
Yeah.
That's it. Be a servant. Have a servant's heart. And that's why when Mark Roy told me about you, I was like, man, I wish I had a bus to do some outreach. Yeah, I'd be all over the world, boy. But
see, I'll be with him now. At first, I want to ride.
It's a beautiful thing. I was just like, it's a beautiful thing because we need people like you with a servant heart to want to tell our stories, want to tell people's life story.
Yeah,
Eli, the West African that you took a picture of that helps out in the church, he was homeless before.
Yeah.
And he used to live next door.
Rented out a
Juan
room.
Juan Martinez, a person of the church, used to rent him out a room. And the young lady that was just in there, Bianca, she's homeless.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But you wouldn't know because they're so uplifting in spirit. You wouldn't think that, you know, they're homeless and they're going through it. But we have done such a good job with blending in the homeless community with the residential community when we're out here that... Unless you really know them, you don't know their story, right? Mm-hmm. And that was one of my goals, was to make sure the taxpayers are taken care of, but also the homeless community and bring them together. So on Wednesdays, we have everybody here. And I wanted them to interact and let them know these are human beings. They're not dogs. You know, they're not lessing you. They're just going through some issues right now. But if you just sit down and get to talk to them, you might be surprised of how educated and intelligent they really are.
Yes, their whole background.
You know, so now I'm seeing that bridge gap now. And that's all I wanted. I just, you know, I always tell my wife, if something happened to me today, I'm good. She's like, quit talking like that. I said, no, but I'm saying that I'm at peace with what I'm doing. You got to be at peace with what you're doing, right? You know, if you're not at peace and love really what you're doing, then why are you doing it? You know, I'm at peace with what I'm doing. I sleep good at night knowing that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yes.
And, you know, I think the hardest thing was during freezing weather, opening up the church at night. We knew that we're a small church. We're going to have to do 24 hours here. I don't know how we did it, but we did it.
That's it.
Twice already.
Yeah.
And one of my first things was when I got installed as pastor, we had pews in there. So my thing was, I was like, man, with the type of outreach I do, I can't utilize the church to the fullest. So first thing we did was got rid of the pews, and me and him drove up to Dallas and got these chairs. They were donated. 100?
Yeah.
Picked up 100 chairs. And I did that for, as you can see, for this reason here. Tomorrow we'll have these chairs completely out of the way, and we'll have cots down here.
Yeah.
And we'll have the homeless in here, and we'll be feeding them. We got our TVs. Last time was Mel Gibson night, right?
You playing like 4-hour movies. He don't do the 2-hour movies.
We had the Patriot, and we had,
he had them going all
night.
We
just had them going on all night, but what got me the most is the next morning they got up, we gave them breakfast. One of the young ladies that stayed in here, she walked outside to smoke a cigarette with two of the other homeless guys, and she said, "Wow, guys," she said, "I haven't slept that this good in months." She goes, "Wasn't that cool how they opened up the church and we're watching movies?" And it made them feel normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Made them, if it was just for a night. And that broke me down because I was like, that's humility right there. That's just being a humble person.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you just, knowing that they had to go back out to their situation, but knowing that they were able to just have some type of peace, right? Sleep good. I mean, they slept so good.
They did.
I mean, I was like, wow.
Snoring good.
I told my wife, was laughing. She was like, because I'm always hitting her. I was like, you just quit snoring. But I told her, I was like, babe, that snoring was like music to my ears in the church. She's like, what? I was like, because I was at peace, because I can't imagine being in that situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, they were snoring hard. Like, I mean, deep sleep, but it felt good.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And so now it's and they don't look for it. It's not, they don't take advantage of the situation because a relationship's already been there. And the other day, they're like, "Pastor, it's going to be cold. You're going to open the church." I was like, "I don't have nobody today," you know. And they're like, "No worries, Pastor. You're good." You know, but that relationship, it took 8 months for me to build a relationship with the homeless community and the community where the church is at.
Police.
And it's been a beautiful journey. And then along with the San Antonio Police Department, they're partners with us as well. So we're partnered with the law enforcement, the FBI, the city of San Antonio, because I knew that, right? They say it takes a village to raise a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What more than to have
all of those resources?
All those resources.
Yeah.
All those resources, and we're able to do what we do, and it's just a beautiful thing.
So to wrap up, just because we need to get going, what are any last things that you want to cover, or anything like, what kind of does the future look like for you guys?
The future for us is I see it being bright. I want to we want to work on getting this church restored. It's 81 years old. Foundation's bad, but I've already see one of my goals is having an intake for women, pregnant young women as well. Yes. We get a lot in this community, so I want to be able to have that available to them as well. We have a lot of housing resources for men, but not for women. So that's one of my goals, one of my visions, is to have an intake for women, and just to continue to grow. Everybody's like, "Man, what are you gonna do if you get you blow out the seams?" And I was like, "Nah, I don't care how big things get. We're standing right here in this community. We're not gonna be that church because we quote unquote they made $500,000. Now we're gonna go build this big old mansion of a church out in the suburbs. That just, we're not serving."
Yeah.
And I was like, "I don't care how big we get, this is where we're going to serve at." And I just, you know, we've been thankful. We have the larger churches that support us.
Yeah.
And that's how it should be. You know, churches working together, and the mega churches supporting the little guys.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of the mega churches can't get to the neighborhood. Right. You know, so it's good to have that partnership. Yeah. So the future is good. I'm excited. I'm going to do this like we say till the wheels fall off.
That's it. We ain't got a bus for wheels.
I don't want my wheels to fall off.
We ain't got a bus for wheels.
Take that back. Take that back.
But we're going to stay in the fight. We're going to stay in the fight. And yeah. I'm just excited. I get energy just for being here. They always tell me to sit down somewhere and
amped up.
Was it
hard to sit for 30 minutes?
I do an 18-hour shift.
Isn't it? Aren't you supposed to pick up your daughter?
I would do an 18-hour shift. Yeah. Last night I didn't go to bed until 1:30. My wife was irritated. She's like, "Why are you out in the garage? Mind your own business and go to sleep."
But you know what? Before he was even installed, I think you were just a deacon. He was going Houston to here. I was doing Corpus to here, but he was doing Houston back here on Wednesdays, Bible study. He was doing 300 miles one way. I was doing 120. I was like, yeah, he got you. Because there is no way that you're doing all those trips back and forth and showing up on time at 7 o'clock p.m. now.
Yeah.
And wake up, what? I'm back on the blacktop, 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, it was one of those. So, yeah.
But things are good.
It was some training.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for letting me come out. I enjoyed it today. We'll go ahead and wrap up this, and then I'm excited to share you guys' story.
Awesome. Right. Thank you.